37. Honour among spies. Modo lay on his side, his back to Colette. He breathed deeply and felt his spine curling in on itself. The hump was slowly rising. She would be able to see it soon enough, but better that than his face. Never his twisted, grotesque face. His wrists ached where the rope was biting into his flesh. Was the blood supply to his hands and feet being cut off? They tingled as though needles were poking them. The door swung open and two soldiers dragged Captain Monturiol into the corner, where they tied her in a sitting position. Modo pressed his face against his shoulder, hiding most of it. Montoriel's jaw was set, her hair bedraggled, and her eyes red-rimmed, but she shed no tears. "Captain," he said, "are you well?" She stared vacantly for a few moments, then ever so slowly turned to look at him. "Spies," she hissed. "That's not true," Colette said. "It was the only bit of truth they told me." "Yes, it is true," Modo admitted. He was glad he couldn't see Colette's reaction to his words. "We were only investigating. We meant no harm." "No harm," she spat. "Infiltrators with golden tongues. I see your rash has returned, Mr. Walken. Is that even your real name?"
"No."
He paused for only a moment before saying, "My name is Modo."
"And am I to believe that the British, your masters, would not have acted in the same manner as these barbarians? You're all cut from the same cloth." "We are honourable," he said,
knowing as he spoke the words that this was untrue. What would Mr. Socrates have done to get the secrets of the Actinio, the plans for New Barcelona? These were two gems that would shine bright in the crown of Britannia. He might very well have come here with several warships.
"There is no honour among thieves or secret agents," Captain Monturiol said. "I should have left both of you to watery graves."
They were silent for several minutes. Modo did not want to imagine what sort of torture Hakandotti had put the captain through. She didn't appear to be bleeding or terribly bruised, but they could have done anything to her. Thapa had told him once that the Chinese methods involved the feet, since that part of the body experienced a deep, lasting pain. If anyone knew those sorts of tricks, it was the Clockwork Guild.
"Modo," Colette whispered, "can't you turn over? Why do you have your back to me?"
"I am becoming deformed," he said simply. "I don't want you to see my face."
"Ah, don't be foolish. I won't be alarmed."
"I can't," he said. "Please leave me be. I must rest and catch my breath."
"Fine," Colette said. "Be stubborn."
"There are no deformities in Icaria," Captain Monturiol whispered.
Then she closed her eyes. Modo stole the occasional glance at her. She was sitting up, ramrod straight, her breath a little laboured, trying to hide her pain. She had a backbone of steel. This woman was, almost single-handedly, trying to create a new country. And she believed in it with such fervour she would sacrifice anything, even her own body. He doubted that the guild had gotten a single word from her. As he slowly shifted into his natural state, he wondered about this Icaria. Monturiol had said that everyone was welcome there, even cripples. And if anyone was crippled, he was. A hunchback. Forever. Mr. Socrates had told him many times, "You are deformed. You are ugly. Your unsightly countenance may seem unbearable now, but because of it, the world will always underestimate you." But what if Modo didn't have to be underestimated? What if there was a place he could live without changing his shape? Where people wouldn't lock him in a cage and charge a fee for others to stare at him? Could Icaria really be like that? He would never walk the streets of London as himself. The room grew darker as the sun set, and the moon lit the dirty glass of the porthole. It was likely only dinner time, Modo realized. The sun set so much earlier this far north. He shivered. The hold was becoming a giant icebox. Someone tapped on the door, which then swung slowly open. The soldier on guard gasped and pulled his pistol, but before he could fire or let out a cry, a fist shot out of the darkness and smashed him in the jaw. He crumpled to the ground. His assailant took a step into the room, squinting. He was bearded, dressed in an India rubber suit, and holding a spear gun. The wan moonlight lit his craggy features.
"Sardar,"
Modo and Captain Monturiel whispered in unison.
"Ever faithful, ever ingenious Sardar," said the captain. "The pillar on which Icaria stands."
"Don't use such words." A knife flashed, and the captain's bonds fell away. Sardar helped her stand. "I received your SOS transmission. The Philomena brought us here. But we had to pedal the last kilometer in order to approach silently."
"Where is the Ictinio?"
Monturiel asked, rubbing her wrists. "She is grappled to starboard, several meters below the surface. They now understand enough of her operation to move her back and forth. I fear one of our comrades must have broken under interrogation."
"It is only to be expected. We are still flesh and blood."
"What of these two?" He pointed his knife at Modo and Colette.
"They are spies," Captain Monturiel said harshly. "Better to cut their throats as they would have done ours while we slept."
"But we didn't, did we?" Colette said.
"Only because you lacked the opportunity."
"No," Modo said. "You misjudge us. We are not your enemies. Take us with you. I and Colette have intimate knowledge of the Clockwork Guild.
We don't need your knowledge."
Modo stirred, moving into the moonlight so that part of his face was revealed. Monturiel and Sardar recoiled. Good. He wanted to shock them, to test their Icarian principles.
"You are dooming us to torture and death at the hands of that evil woman. I thought compassion was at the heart of your Icaria."
Monturiel raised a fist.
"You are not pure enough to speak the name Icaria. I offered you a place in a perfect society. My reward was to lose my most precious possession."
"Quel drame," Colette said.
"But how many people have you sacrificed? Are we two more to be left behind? You knew the risk of being spies."
"Would your father leave us here?" Modo asked.
"Don't speak of him," she snapped. "Don't."
She grabbed the knife from Sardar and swung it toward Modo. He closed his eyes, was surprised when he felt the ropes fall from his arms and ankles. She had nicked his skin in several places. She stepped over him, and he heard Colette give a few small, pained grunts. Monturiel was obviously careless with the blade. While she worked at Colette's bonds, Modo jammed his numb fingers into his pockets and fumbled to retrieve his mask. He felt a hand helping him. Sardar was bent over him.
"It is secure now," he said.
He lifted Modo up onto wobbly legs. There was nothing Modo could do about his hair, which would soon be falling out in clumps. Maybe the netting would hold it in place. Colette was beside him, looking as drained as he felt, but standing steady.
"We shall see what your words are worth," Monturiel said.
She still gripped the knife tightly, as if she might at any second plunge it into either of their hearts.
"Do you swear to help us free the Ictinio?"
"What do we receive in return?"
Colette shot back.
"Your lives," Monturiel answered.
"We need more than that," Modo said.
"Where will you take us once we've helped you?"
"I shall deposit you on Iceland. I cannot promise anything beyond that."
"So, do you swear?"
"I swear,"
Modo and Colette said together.
"What of our comrades?"
Monturiel asked Sardar.
"They are locked up amidships."
"We have a hard decision," Sardar said. "Only luck brought me to you.
If we attempt to free them, we will wake up this hornet's nest of soldiers and accomplish nothing. We do not have room on the Philomena for more than a few."
She nodded.
"The decision is clear. We must protect New Barcelona first and strive to release them later. We all swore oaths to defend Icaria. They will understand."
Modo felt a tightening in his guts. All those comrades deserted on this ship. He didn't want to imagine how Hakan Dottir would treat them. Sardar opened the door and looked about. Modo's heart pounded. At any moment he expected Griff to laugh and their chance of escape to vanish. But Sardar motioned them forward, and soon they were climbing a set of stairs to the deck of the Wyvern. Sedar had left a grappling hook in a dark corner on the port side, only a few feet from the stairs. They silently climbed down the rope. Modo's grip was weak, and he feared he'd fall into the water below. When he set his feet on the deck of the Philomena, the ship sank a little deeper. It was much smaller than the Actinio, more like a cutter than a ship. He followed Colette, squeezing himself down through the hatch and into the aft, each motion making the submarine ship rock in the water. The interior smelled moist. Comrade Garay was at the helm, one hand on the wheel, as he peered at the dials and switches. He nodded at Modo.
"Take a seat," Sedar whispered. "Both of you. Place your feet upon the pedals."
They did as instructed.
"Comrade Garay," Montoriel said, putting her hand on his shoulder, "please take us down 10 meters.
The vessel submerged, and they began pedaling away.